for the introduction and welcome, everybody. Lovely to see you all. So, let me tell you a little bit about myself, and I'll ask Wilna to do the same. Claire Norman. I run Claire Norman Coaching Associates Limited, and I have two strands to my bow. One is coaching within organisations, and then the other is working with coaches on the supervisory side and also mentor coaching for credentialing. I always have to say mentor coaching really carefully because people think I say mental coaching, which it's not. And we'll talk a lot more about those two later on, about how we use those to professionalise the service that the internal coaches in King's College were using. But let me ask Wilna to say something about herself.
Hi everyone, my name is Wilna Gracias and I work as the Academic Support Manager at King's College London. In my previous role for 3 years, I supported students through what we called well-being coaching and met Claire as our mentor coach and provided supervision as well to help us become accredited.
Lovely. So you're getting a sense of the story that we're going to be telling today about the two sides of coaching for students, but also how did we support the coaches within all of that. So with that as context, I'd like to know a little bit more from you about what would you like to walk away with by the time you leave here, and what or how will you know that you've got what you need? So if you want to spend a couple of moments talking to the person next to you about what are your expectations and how will you know you've got that, that would be great. Okay, let's bring you back together then. So what are your expectations? What would you like to walk away with? Let's get a few sample ideas.
So I've counselled students in this setting, but I haven't coached them.
Okay.
So it's quite, I'm wondering, I mean, I know what the difference is, but I'm wondering how you access the students, who would say, take up of it.
Brilliant.
Mentoring versus coaching.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's really poignant because actually King's College London has a counselling service as well, and coaching arose from the fact that people were going to counselling with issues that were more on the coaching side of things, and so they work rather neatly together. So we will talk a bit about that. Thank you.
I think just how it sort of works with students in terms of what form it takes, you know, compared to the classic 1 hour conversation, what are the means to take place
by,
what mix as well.
Okay, so how to coach students and how that's different from other coaching.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people talk about use of technology and so as part of the equation, which I guess I'm interested to hear a little bit.
Yep, you can talk about that.
Great, lovely. Carol?
And, I've got two hats, really. As one as a supervisor, because I supervise people learning to be coaches at Brooks, so, but that's an academic institute, so again, you know, some of the stuff on there. And the other, I coach people who bring Templeton College in Oxford. They tend, because it's a PhD college, they tend to be more mature. So I'm really interested in
how is
my experience fit with yours?
Lovely, thank you.
So, yeah, I'm just really interested in hearing about, echoing what someone else said there about how to engage people in coaching at this age. I have a 19 year old son and I try and have coaching conversations.
No chance. Dad, stop coaching me. Great, okay, thank you. Any more? Yeah.
I'm quite interested in how it came about that Kate Stockbridge decided to use culture.
Okay, yeah. We'll tell you the story.
From my experience of working in academia for a little bit, is that all students need support.
All students?
So, not just one balance resources.
Yeah. How to balance resources, yeah. Mm-hmm. Great.
I'm also quite interested in how you evaluate it as well, the value of it, and how you know it works.
Okay. Not sure that we've specifically got that in the agenda, but
I can add some bits about that. Yeah.
Great. Perfect. All right. Any more that we need to get coverage on?
I was mainly interested, because I don't work with students, but I'm always interested in the sort of cross-disciplinary lessons that we can share with one another.
Yes.
So that's very broadly, and much more narrowly, just on the whole sort of well-being remit. So I do a lot of work around mental health awareness.
Yes.
And so someone I know within university is keen to have discussions. So I'm interested specifically in students and well-being coaches. And I think you mentioned very briefly well-being coaching.
So. Great. Yeah. So there'll be a bit of both of those, the actual transfer of how can you use what we know about this in other situations, and then also the wellness piece. Wonderful. Great. Well, we shall attempt to do all of that. in this kind of format, this is what we hope you to walk away with. Understanding the business case for using coaching at universities. Appreciating the impact on the students themselves. Figuring out how to professionalise an internal coaching function, whether that's in a university or not. And last but not least, thinking about how you might transfer some of this into your own work, whether that's in universities or in other academic institutions or elsewhere. What can you learn that can help you in the work that you do? Of course, that's exactly why you're here. So, with all of that in mind as context, let's dig in to the journey.
All right. So I don't know how many of you have a young person in your life who's on their way to university or currently at university? Okay, so some of this might be familiar. It was 13 years ago that I was a freshman at the University of Florida. So we're just gonna take some time back and travel into the past to think about the student journey. I think there's a myth that once a student takes their A-levels and has an offer and has a spot in university, they're done and dusted. That's it, let's send them off, and they'll get on with it. But we really need to think about what the student experience is like from beginning to end. So starting with thinking about when students are finishing and leaving school. So this idea that students are leaving what's comfortable and what's known, they've been in a system for 12, 13, 14 years, they know how it works. I show up to school, there's a teacher at the front of the classroom, there's perhaps a lesson that's prepared, I get told what to learn, and I get tested on it. And that's the system that students have been in education, the type of education that we have. And they're used to how that system works. And now we're asking them to leave the comfort of school, of education, and to go into the unknown. Some of them are leaving families, leaving home for the first time. I was the first in my family to graduate from university. I moved 6 hours away to a very small town, and it was the first time I realized that I was a minority ethnic student. I'd grown up in Miami my whole life, had not realized, talking about labels this morning, that this was a label that was placed on me. Leaving home, leaving what you know, for the students that come to King's College London, they're moving to a big city, metropolitan city, perhaps using the tube for the first time, learning public transport. They're arriving at university. Exciting for some, scary for some. Having to learn this new system. I'm at university. What's the expectation of me and what's my expectation of university? I'm having to live on my own. For a lot of the students that I've met with through my coaching practice, it's the first time that they're cooking, the first time that they're budgeting their own money, the first time that they are managing their own schedule. So no one's there to tell them when to get up, when to do chores, when to go to bed, to go to class. It's all a choice. It's the first time that they've had a lot of choice. And how are young people affected with that opportunity of choice for the first time? And then we're expecting them to be subject experts. So you're on a course on war studies, you're on a course on medicine, and in the next 5 years, you will know everything and all there is to know about how to be a doctor in this country. It's the first time that they're being asked to read scientific journals, different types of reading comprehension is needed, thinking about their critical thinking skills, skills that perhaps they've started to use, A-levels, GCSEs, but they're really being asked to be independent learners, active learners. You're no longer walking into a classroom and just being taught. The expectation is that you're preparing and you're coming in to participate. And then in 3 short years, we're asking them to choose a career. So you've just gone through this major upheaval, this major transition, and now you need to know what you're gonna do for the rest of your life. You need to have it figured out. And there's a lot of pressure on our young people to choose the right career, especially now with fees having gone up and the possibility of it changing, with the Augur report recommending that fees go up. I need to make the most of this degree. I need to make sure that these 3, 4, 5, 6 for some of our medical students is worth all the money and all the time that they've invested. And then the comfort of university, the system, this place that they've gotten used to, now we're asking them to leave and go into the real world and start work and develop as a professional. All with the assumption that our young people already have these skills and strategies themselves. So this idea that somehow magically when you become an adult or when you enter higher education, you know how to play the game of university, you know all the unspoken rules, you have the networks to get the internships, you have the finances to do the study abroad, and you have what it takes to get the degree that you're at university for. So there's a lot of expectations, there's a lot of pressure on our young people, and if you have been tuning into the media, there is a lot happening now around mental health and looking after our young people. So how can we use coaching? Yes, question. So at King's, we have 30% international and about 23% EU students. So And a lot of actually what is considered home students are students that live outside of London. And now we have a huge representation of what we're calling super commuters. So students who are traveling more than 2 hours into the city to attend classes because they can't afford to live in London. So they're living at home. So think about what the experience is for someone who's commuting 2 hours or whatever. You know, I've met students from Cambridge who are commuting in, just go to lectures, and the minute lectures are done, they're out. And we also have to think about our underrepresented students. So students from non-traditional backgrounds, which we call WP students or widening participation students, students who are care leavers, they're estranged from their families, forced migrants and asylum seekers. We have a huge amount of students who are now considered mature students, so returning to education after the age of 24, 25. So thinking about those specific, unique needs of those student groups as well when you think about the student journey. Yes?
I do a lot of work at master's levels. So on the MBA traditionally, it's about 95% that are local non-UK citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
yep. Yeah, and that the student journey, I didn't even touch on, just as you said, master's and PhD students. So students, excuse me, who are perhaps coming into a very small cohort. Sometimes I met a student who had seven other peers in her cohort, coming in, maybe a semester full of lectures, and then you're off to do research, and you're sitting in a lab, or you're on your own at home working on a thesis or a dissertation. So the loneliness and the isolation and the lack of community that some of our students experience on their courses is something to take into consideration as well. So how can we use coaching to support these students? What I wanna do is have you guys maybe divide up into groups of four or five. I think there's about 20 of you.
20.
And we want you to pick one of these flip chart papers. So we have five different groups: arriving at university, living independently, becoming a subject expert, choosing a career, and leaving university. So thinking about these transitions or these stages in a university student's life, what kind of questions, so putting ourselves in the shoes of current university students, what questions are we likely to ask at this stage? So if you were a student, or putting yourself back, you know, when you were a student at that stage, what were the questions that you were asking yourself? And which of these do you think can be addressed through coaching? And we talked about, or rather than counseling or training. So really think, how appropriate can this be for coaching? Okay? Any questions? Nope. So we'll give you a few minutes, and then you'll rotate with less time at each of the stations. But again, add what questions are students asking themselves at these stages.
So can I suggest that you five come to this flip chart here to start with? Yeah, if you go there, if you five go to this one at the front, and if you guys go to that one over there, we're missing one, but that's okay. We can fill that in as we go. What are the kinds of issues that they're likely to bring up? Things that they're worried about? Well, yeah, there might be a crossover, but
it's all coming up.
There's various options as well, isn't there?
It's fine.
we can move
so
them
what would the
to that
questions
one next
be
time.
If you know that yeah. some of the issues are time yes, management,
we'll cover it.
In living in halls, making friends,
yeah.
like, what would no, those questions be?
Each and all.
Yeah.
So how do I
I get that question a lot.
Okay, let's give you another one. Thank you.
It's just due to
there you go.
Thank you. Let's go.
Missing the second activity in my slides. We have got. Don't we have a second one? It would be that way.
Yeah, it's.
Oh, there it is. I don't know why I haven't got that. Oh, you do. Yeah, there we go.
Am I doing that? Or are you?
You're doing that one.
Okay.
Yeah. To make sure they've seen all of them.
Yeah. So maybe give them 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move you to the next one. I realize you're in the midst of great conversations, but if I could ask you guys to move to that one there, please. If you go here,
you guys will move.
You go that way.
This one?
And you go that way. Please. Thank you.
So you don't have to add any new questions if you feel everything is covered. But if there are some questions that you would like to add, please do so.
You've skipped one.
You guys go.
You can go straight to that one and do it on your own if you like. That's what we need. Bit of engagement.
Everything they're talking about, I've had a student come to me with
yeah, brilliant.
brilliant.
Move again. Clockwise, please.
You'll be moving to living independently.
Chuck them out their spot. Move them on.
As you finish that last question, I'll ask you guys to move over to leaving university.
Going to go to the Arctic and look after huskies.
Would you like some more paper?
Thank you. Yeah, go for it. That's a good question. What if I don't know what I want to do?
I didn't.
Yeah.
You
don't. What about life outside of work and academic life?
I don't have a student discount card anymore.
So if they can go see the last two that they haven't seen.
Yeah. Oh.
We're gonna write up. We could write on the wall, but you won't be able to take that home with you.
So we're going to give you one more minute in this last station, so please.
All right, you'll get to it later.
Yeah, you can swap now, and in this next station, just have a glance of the questions. You don't need to add anything.
No discipline, it's all right. You're going to have to watch that group. They're really noisy. They're very disruptive.
So these last two stations will be a very quick visit.
We have new instructions for you. Listen up.
So these will be two quick visits, so you'll be at your station just for about a minute or so. I'm not asking you to add any questions, but just take a look of the questions that your peers have added and see if there's anything that you would add to that. You don't necessarily have to write something, but just have a review of those questions, and then we'll move you one last time, and you'll do the same, just to ensure that you've seen all five sections. So just have a quick review. And think which of these resonates with you. All right, I'm gonna ask you to wrap up your conversations at that station and just move one more time to the next one. And again, review the questions, which ones resonate with you.
Yeah, just realised that.
Brilliant. I'm going to ask you guys to wrap up your conversations and come back to your seats. Thank you for putting yourselves in the shoes of our current university students and thinking about what their experience might be like.
Yes.
Yes. Please. You can come back to your seats.
Time to sit. Rebels.
Yeah, exactly. So what's the overall feeling having thought about the university experience from the perspective of a current student?
What's the overall feeling?
Yeah.
There's lots of questions.
Lots of questions? Fear and excitement?
Overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed.
Big transition at the start and the end of university.
Yep, and transitions in between if you're moving from halls to private accommodation, switching
so
courses.
Really key who you connect with, so your initial friendship group can kind of set the stage for how you live it, how you do it.
Yep, so. And this is exactly why we brought coaching to the university. So we came across some funding a few years ago, and the director of student services at our university had gone on a coaching course and had seen the power of coaching, and at the same time was seeing that there was a long waiting list for our students to be seen by the counseling service. So some of our universities are experiencing 6 to 8 weeks of wait time for students to be seen by a counselor. And as students were being triaged and they were going in for assessments, what we were finding was students needed some form of support, but it wasn't necessarily mental health support or support through counseling, therapy, and groups. And so we thought, what if we brought something onto the university campus that was proactive, that was in line with positive psychology and really thinking about how do you help students thrive, how do you help students realize their potential, and how do you help students build skills and strategies to be successful at university? And that's where the well-being service was birthed, and why the coaches were brought on. And so we were trained as soon as we were hired. We came from various backgrounds and received training on coaching skills. So we had intensive first few months, and then dispatched across our campuses. So King's College London is comprised of 5 campuses, 4 of which are concentrated around central London and 1 which is in South London, which is our Denmark Hill campus. And we set 4 each coach to a campus, so we had 4 coaches. And we spent a lot of time building relationships with our colleagues in the different faculties or schools and departments, meeting with heads of faculty, heads of departments. Our university has a personal tutoring system, which means that an academic is assigned, each student is assigned an academic in their department to help look after them, speak to them about academic or welfare issues. So we met with senior tutors, we met with personal tutors, and we informed them what the service was about. We participated in our welcome or induction week, and we spoke to students offering this service. We also held workshops. So along with the one-to-one function, there were workshops that we facilitated on a variety of topics. And it was quite interesting hearing your conversations, because I could think of students who have come to me for a variety of these issues that you guys spoke about. So students could self-select. We had an application form online where students just filled out their basic information and just a quick 1 to 2 sentences about why they thought coaching would help them. And sometimes students were referred to us by personal tutors or by other services. So students would seek a known adult at the university and they would refer them to us. And it was focused on helping improve well-being, and really the tagline that I always use to describe it to students was, it's helping you build your resourcefulness through uncovering skills and strategies that you have to look after yourself. A lot of students came to us at the beginning, tell me what to do, solve this for me. And it's a lot of teaching them what coaching is. So I'm not here to give you advice. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to help you explore your options and help you think about what the possibilities are. We also really use this idea of creating positive change and setting goals. So for students, that really resonated with them. So there was a big emphasis on goal setting and helping them create positive change and really getting the most out of university. So there's this misconception that university can be the best years of your life. And so a lot of students feel the pressure to do so. And so we used coaching to help them think about that. Students could access the service for up to 6 sessions of coaching per year. I saw a few students for multiple years who would come back and say coaching was really impactful. I specifically worked at our London Bridge campus, which housed our medical and dental students, some of which are on placement outside of London. So I also offered Skype coaching sessions with them, which students found incredibly helpful because they weren't traveling 2 to 3 hours to come into central London to see me for a 45-minute session. In terms of evaluation, just to touch on it briefly before I hand over to Claire, we used the Warren Edinburgh scale, the 7-question scale. We did a pre-questionnaire and a post-questionnaire, and then asked students some anecdotal questions about how coaching had impacted them, or the Warwick Edinburgh scale of mental well-being. So there's a 14-question and a 7-question scale, and that's what we helped, what the tool that we used to evaluate the service. We just did one-to-one coaching, and then we facilitated workshops as well.
Great. Thank you. So, after all this great work that the coaches had started, they actually were recognising that they really wanted to professionalise their own skills to get themselves credentialed through the ICF. So, the part where I come in is to talk about particularly the mental coaching and the supervision that we did together in order to get them to that point of credentialing. So, if we talk about mentor coaching first, anybody here is a mentor coach or has had mentor coaching? Okay, so what is the definition of, oh, well, you've got it up here, but how is it different from supervision? Exactly. It's about the competencies. It's about being observed, demonstrating those competencies and receiving feedback about that. So what's special about mentor coaching is it really highlights the blind spots of the coach, which they would not necessarily bring to a supervision session because they don't know they're not doing it or that they are doing it. So this was one of the places that we started with the coaches within King's College London to help them to surface those blind spots and to really sharpen their edge.
Do you mean you'd literally be in a session?
No. So the way that we did it was twofold. Good segue into this one. So we did group mental coaching and we did one-to-one. In the group mental coaching, they coached each other with the rest of the group observing. And with me observing, and then they got feedback from themselves, first of all, then the person they were coaching, then the rest of the observers, then me. And it was all based on the competencies, so it's specifically targeted at the framework for the ICF as they were going for the ICF credential. Then we also did one-to-one, and the way we did one-to-one was have them record their a live session with one of the students and to bring that along to discuss with me. So we would stop it and start it and we would think about how did the contracting go? How well did you do on direct communication? So we would use the competencies to really help us to dig into what they were, what they could sharpen up, but also what they were already really good at and what their coaching essence was. So that was one piece of the puzzle with them. As you take a photo, I won't move it yet. And the other piece of the puzzle was coaching supervision, and hopefully we all know what coaching supervision is. But you can imagine the kinds of things that they were bringing to supervision. So we did group supervision, and in those sessions we did a couple of things. One was about each one of them bringing a client case that they wanted to talk about and then receiving many-to-one coaching or supervision to help them to figure out what to do with that case. And also we harvested the learning. So what was it that they were all hearing or seeing in the system? What was systemic that they actually needed to figure out? Well, how do we change the system? So we had one session where actually they walked away with this great action plan of things that they needed to present back to the organisation about this is how we need to do things differently in order to meet the needs of our students. So I believe that supervision and mental coaching are the most individualised form of CPD that we can do as coaches. we can go on courses, yes, but they're not tailored to us personally, whereas mental coaching and supervision both are. So let's talk about when you would use each one of these. Catherine already talked about mental coaching being about the competencies. So when you want to sharpen your competency edge, also at the moment when you are working towards a credential for the ICF. Now I am starting to make the argument that we should be using mental coaching much more frequently than we do today. It should not only be about getting a credential. It should be something that we do for life. And the reason for that is because it does keep us sharp. It keeps that edge, which we lose so quickly when we don't get feedback from other coaches. Of course, we get feedback from our clients, but they don't necessarily know what great looks like. So I'm starting on that bandwagon to try to influence the coaching bodies that we should be doing this for life, not just for credentialing. And then with supervision, it's all about staying. Yep,
go on. Can I just ask you a question? So mental coaching is, a lot of it is about dealing with your own stuff as well as, or is that?
Supervision. That would be what you'd bring to supervision, how I get in the way.
Really, mental coaching is about just competencies. I say I mean about bringing excellence.
Bringing excellence, lovely way of putting it. Yeah. Carol?
I think it would be really helpful is if we can get the various professional bodies to agree on what competencies are, because that would help.
It would, wouldn't it?
It would help then to make this something that all the bodies.
Yes. We could all be focused on the same set of competencies. That would certainly make it easier, for sure. Yeah. Did you have something else? Is there much of a difference between mental coaching and
competencies?
Oh, they're probably close.
Pretty similar.
Yeah, close-ish, but with a few nuances, I think, or a few additions in some that are not in the others. So supervision is much more about staying safe, about reflecting on our relationships with our students, in the case of KCL. It's about restoring our personal energy for coaching. You know all of this. That I'm hoping that you all have supervision at the moment, even if you don't have mental coaching. And as you said, when the personal intrudes on the professional, this is the time when we need to be bringing it in. So, for example, for internal coaches, and I remember this for myself when I was an internal coach, and I don't think I recognised it until after I had left, how much what I was hearing in coaching was about the organisation and what was going on in the organisation, how much that was affecting my relationship as an employee with the organisation. So that's a place where the personal definitely intrudes for internal coaches when they're hearing stuff going on about the way the organisation is set up. So over to you to talk about what happened as a result of this professionalisation.
Yeah, it was incredibly helpful to have Claire come in. In terms of the mentor coaching, I remember two specific things when I met with Claire that I didn't know were my blind spots. So I'm a pretty confident person, was a pretty confident coach. I was, I don't want to say the most popular coach, but a lot of students were engaging with me for coaching. And it was through the mentor coaching, specifically with the group, and then one-to-one when we would stop the recording, that I realized that I was rescuing a lot of my clients and not allowing them to come to the conclusions themselves. And it was something that Claire really challenged me on. And what was really helpful as well was getting feedback from the other coaches and thinking about, why did you ask this question? Why did your line of questioning go in this direction? And it was just something that we hadn't done before. So it was really helpful to identify our strengths. It was really helpful to identify our blind spots. In terms of using the mentor coaching and supervision for credentialing, it really helped legitimize our service and legitimize us as coaches. So a lot of people were wary about coaching. Oh, it's the fluffy stuff. And we heard all sorts of comments from academics, from colleagues in the counseling service, where people didn't necessarily see us as qualified individuals, and so getting the supervision and the mentor coaching and our credentials really helped in feeling and legitimizing the work. We were able to see things through a different lens, and again, being internal coaches, exactly what Claire touched on. A lot of the stories and the narratives that our students were sharing with us about their experiences really impacted how we felt about the organization, our morale. I think there was one session where Claire came in and we were just so low. Everything just felt so negative. And through our session, really able to re-energize and really reignite that passion for coaching and that passion for supporting students.
I have a question. Like in the keynote speech, she was talking about when to speak up around organizations and how to support students to maybe choose if to speak up or not to speak up, and that, you know, to be part of something where you can see the kind of corruption in it, or corrupting relationship, and to then work through that as a coach and step back from it, but also how to empower students to actually call it out.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that came out from one of our sessions. We did walk away with this plan, sort of like a plan of attack of how we would address some of the issues or challenges that we were experiencing. And one of the things that I did because of this plan and through the support or supervision was I sat down with the head of counseling and we came up with an action plan of how we could help students and help academics differentiate coaching from counseling. And we were able to come up with some common language that was then published in literature for students around the support that was available.
But I was more thinking about if the issues within the organization itself, as in, you know, how tutors treat students,
yes,
or things around that, because part of an organization, if you don't actually believe in ethos in the organization, the coaching within that, how do you change the coaching culture to? Was that part of the journey that you did, where you actually challenged how related?
Definitely, and we're still challenging. And I'll share a bit more about what the future of coaching looks like at King's.
Is it? No, I think it's you.
Oh, no, that's perfect. So one of the things that we started to think about and have conversations around, how do we use coaching in a targeted way? So any student could, as someone said earlier, all students need support. But how are we targeting specific students and students from underrepresented backgrounds? And so that's the direction that we moved in this year. At the beginning of the year, one of our coaches undertook a pilot program that targeted coaching to care leavers, so students leaving care. She also was placed in the Center for Doctoral Studies and one day a week provided support to PhD students only. And what we're doing now is thinking about exactly what you said. So I am part of a team that looks after personal tutoring, the first year experience, and our institution's mental health strategy. And so we're challenging the way that we think about supporting students and really taking a more proactive and strength-based approach to supporting students. So I'm working closely with my colleague on personal tutoring to bring in coaching conversations as part of some resources for staff and academics.
Great. So let's find out where you are now. We are just before lunch. So what have you taken away from this session that you did not know at the beginning? And what actions are you taking out of this session? So let's just get a few thoughts from you. What do you know now that you didn't know at the beginning? So what has surfaced?
I've got a curiosity, I think, which is around the kind of coach mentoring and credentialing process and how that was clearly really valued by the internal coaches. But I wonder, I'm curious about how that's valued by, is it valued by the organisation and the coaches, the students? Does it make a difference to them that the internal coach is credentialed or not?
That might be a great question for us to talk about after the session, Melissa. Thank you. Yes.
If you go back to, I think it was your second slide,
That one?
Yeah. I think that's an interesting sort of reframe.
Hmm.
I quite like that. And
say more about the reframe. I think this can be really useful to any of us who have students in our lives, directly or friends, children, for example, to be helping them through these transition points in, out, in between. Yeah.
I suppose the other thing is the common ground of just working in business is that, like an EAP, like a thing is that provided, is available, will people pick up on it? Will they access it? Will they see it as a strength? Will they think I'm too vulnerable? I can't do that. How do you make it kind of valuable?
Safe.
You see from the coaches, the mentor coaching is really important. And yet, how do you help them to own it?
Yeah.
I suppose what actually the thing I'm saying is some hope actually that you're changing culture within the whole organisation, within the university, and that's I think exciting. If you have to start somewhere and then.
It is possible.
To have a new
yeah. I saw one thing, Catherine.
Thank you. I had two questions actually. One is around one code per campus doesn't feel much resource, and I wonder how kind of you manage supply demand, particularly once there is a narrative about how valuable coaching is. And the second point was, I was really interested in the kind of feedback to the system around you know what coaches are discovering, around what needs to change, and how much appetite there is more widely. To hear and respond to those messages. So I could imagine that could turn into actually demonising the coaching as a way of kind of disrupting the system.
And we are at time, more or less, so we don't have time to go into the questions as a group, but definitely come and talk to us afterwards, because that will be an interesting discussion. One more.
So just an observation, something to take away about the language. So you talk about student counselling services, for example. I know counselling services suggest there's something you have a problem with you really sorting out. Coaching puts in a slightly different light, a more positive reframe, if you like, which might be more engaging, I can see, for students to go along with within the organisation you're in. But
the culture change piece.
I like that language.
Wonderful. Thank you. I think that's a great place to end. Thank you for all your participation. We have some handouts here about the differences of mentor coaching and supervision, if you would like those as you leave. I'll leave them on a chair at the back. Oh, there we go. Thank you.
Thank you for the generosity.